Good afternoon. I'm Callie Crossley. This is the Callie Crossley Show. To mark Martin Luther King Day, we're looking at race with a focus on Boston. Over the weekend, the exhibit Race, Are We So Different? Opened at the Museum of Science. Joining us to talk about the importance of contextualizing race at the Museum of Science with an emphasis on science is Evelyn Hammons, the Dean of Harvard College. Dean Hammons is the author of numerous books. The latest is The Nature of Difference, co-authored with Rebecca Herzig. Her work focuses on how science examines human variation through race. Dean Hammons, welcome.
Thank you.
So I saw the exhibit. It's, you know, very interesting, highly interactive, a lot for people to take in and I think and to absorb. But and there are three themes to the exhibit, just so people know: the everyday experience of race, the science of human variation, and the history of the idea of race, which is what a little bit of what you and I are going to talk about here. Because I think when people, they think they know everything, you know, well, okay, well, what's there to have an exhibit about? It's race and why is it at the Museum of Science? And yet, what people understand as race is really something that was a social, that is a social construct that was, in fact, made up. I just want to quote you, to you, something that you said in the California Newsreel documentary called Race, the Power of an Illusion, which aired several years ago. You said, there is not a gap between what the regular person on the street understands about race and what scientists and anthropologists or social scientists think about race. So that's what we mean about this social construct. Can you explain that a little bit?
So I think that what's really important for us to understand about the concept of race is that it's a vexed concept, it's complex, it's deeply embedded in American history, and at the same time, most people think they understand it. They think race is what they see. You know it when you see it, is the common way of saying that. And it means that once you see someone's skin color, eye shape, hair, texture of their hair, shape of lips, all of those things, and you put them all together in one particular package, then you think, okay, that person is of a particular race. But what we miss by doing that and just taking it as a common sense truism, not only do we take that picture that we see by putting together the obvious characteristics of someone, we also think it has a deeper meaning, that those outward characteristics tell us something about who that person is, what their capacities are, what their behaviors are likely to be. And that, all of that comes from the history of race in America. So particularly in a country where we start, where we begin in 1619 with the origins of chattel slavery. And by ascribing certain characteristics to the slaves, correlating those characteristics with color.
Like what?
Slaves are lazy. Okay. It meant that everyone who had the basic characteristics of a slave, and that was usually people of African descent, that means dark skin, the hair, the whole thing, then that meant those people have the characteristics of being lazy. And so color, outward characteristics like color and those things were then added to behavioral characteristics, which then suggested that, well, you would never expect a person of that descent to be able to be a writer, which is the surprise about Phyllis Wheatley in the early part of America. How could a slave or a person who was of African descent write? How could a person of African descent produce great art? So we put those outward characteristics together with behavioral characteristics and came up with this notion of race that said it was more than skin deep, and that the outward characteristics told us something about the deeper qualities of a human being.
Now, as I've said, this exhibit Race, Are We So Different? Is at the Museum of Science. So the point, of course, is to bring some scientific overlay to this. So you, as an expert in the history of science, what do you want people to take away from that? You've just said what we know it to be, but what it really isn't. So what should this exhibit really open up for us?
Well, I think this exhibit is wonderful. It's got some great interactive aspects to it. But remember, the exhibit begins with a question: are we so different? So the purpose of the exhibit is to explore the misconceptions, the preconceptions, the assumptions we make about what it means to be a person who has race or what race means in our society. So a good place to examine some of where our misconceptions come from is to take apart, is to go through science, biological sciences, there's some social science in it as well, medical stories that challenge our preconceptions and ask, well, you know, are African-Americans the people who get sickle cell anemia? Is that an African-American disease? Well, you'll find out, no, it's not an African-American disease. Sickle cell disease appears among many people who are descendants of people who lived in malarial regions of the world. But in America, we had this story that sickle cell is a Black disease or an African-American disease. So science, medicine, those are good places to have our preconceptions challenged. And as I said, I like the title, Are We So Different? You begin with the question. I hope people go through, see the exhibits, and either come out with more questions, that would be good, or have some of the questions that, some of the things that they thought they knew for sure challenged in provocative ways.
We are speaking with Evelyn Hammond. She's a dean of Harvard College. She's also the author of numerous books, including the latest, The Nature of Difference, co-authored with Rebecca Herzig, and she is a history of science expert. So now, because you're a scientist, we tend to say, okay, if the scientist says this is so, then it must be. So talk to me about the tangled history of scientists ascribing some of this social construct of race to what we would believe to be objective evidence.
So I think there's a long history, certainly in the United States and Western Europe, about scientists coming to try to explain the issue of race, offering various kinds of explanations from various scientific disciplines. But that's a big, long story. So let me just stick to one in particular. So, for example, physicians were very involved in helping to create and shore up a notion of race in the United States from the period of slavery through to the current moment. And that had to do with, as I mentioned before, about sickle cell disease is one good example. But physicians tended to argue that these people of African descent who lived here in America had different kinds of diseases. And that their bodies were fundamentally different somehow. And through the 19th century, you can read paper after paper of long catalogs, the Negro ear, the Negro foot, Negro being the operative word that was used in that time to talk about people of African descent and African Americans, the Negro ear, the Negro foot, the Negro eye, the measuring the length of the body and seeing if the length of the leg of the Negro was the same as the length of the leg of the average white person. So all of this is about asking questions about not are we different, but assuming that there were fundamental and absolute immutable differences in the body between those people we call African and African Americans and those people we call whites and largely of European descent. And so as we move from a tradition of that kind of measurement of bodies and looking at body parts into a more sophisticated tradition where I would argue we're now talking about gene differences, our ancestry, what kind of differences when we think about genetic differences between individuals, can we begin to talk about genetic differences between groups? And so people still find themselves, different kinds of scientists now, not just physicians, asking questions about, well, if we find that there's a higher propensity of a particular kind of gene in one group of people, say African-Americans and whites, which tends to be the groups that are compared constantly in the United States, then that means something. Right. And of course, what's very hard for, I think, many contemporary scientists, biomedical researchers to do this is they think they're trying to answer a question about gene differences. But if they do that exploration and then report it out and say African-Americans have different frequencies of this kind of genes or versus whites, then you're back talking about fundamental differences between people. That's how it's heard. That's how it's understood. And so what the scientists have struggled with throughout a very long history is how to talk about human variation, which is real and important to understand, without getting caught up in talking about this thing called race, which is social, political, historical, has had different meanings over time. There are different names that we call people over time. And there's no consensus about the meaning of race. So the scientist who's trying to get at something pretty basic and fundamental then finds himself sitting or herself sitting in the midst of a conversation about politics and history that they find, many of them find, incredibly uncomfortable. So the scientists, I think, fundamentally want to study human variation. And yet, in a country, and particularly where race has had such an important part of our history, been such an important part of our history, it's very difficult for them to just contain that into a study about variation.
And so what happens then when the nature of difference, the studying of human variation, creeps over into these other areas and becomes understood, like that's mm-hmm. this is what is real in a lot of people's minds. What happens then? What's the danger of that?
Well, I think the danger is that what slips into what might be a completely valid study that shows us something about human variation then turns into, seamlessly, into a story about racial difference, which means that, again, it brings back that whole story that we're fundamentally different because of these our outward phenotype, and now even due to deeper differences, rather than reinforcing a story which many scientists ascribe to now, which is there's one human species. Yes, there's variation and there's differences, but we're one human species, and those differences are sometimes important and significant, but let's not think about them in the ways in which many people did, say, at the middle of the 20th century, to think that there's a hierarchy of races, and there's some that are better than others, some far more superior than others in a whole host of characteristics, and those characteristics can be read in the body. So I think that vexed history, certainly the excesses of Nazism, brought to the fore how far you could take this notion of race and think about it as there are pure races in the world, there are superior races in the world, there are inferior races in the world, and lots of little remnants of that kind of racism, actually, is still a part of how we think about each other. So I think the problem for scientists today is they want to talk about variation, they want to explore difference, but then it gets caught up in that story again that means, well, you're saying that if...
somebody's less than.
Yes, mm-hmm. exactly. The hierarchical notions creep back in.
So you have said, if we learned it, race as a social construct, and we understand what you've just been telling us, which is that there's human variations, but it's not race, we can unlearn it. How do we do that?
Now you're asking me a question that my students said. My students jumped right on that point from race is the power of an illusion. So what I really meant by that, you know, a social construct is sort of a framing, a way of looking at the world. And I don't think we need to look at the world through the lens of race, particularly now when it has so many varied meanings for so many different people. The United States of America is, I like to think of it, it's extraordinarily diverse. We have in my classroom this year when I taught my new book, there was only one student who was of African-American descent of many, many generations. There were first-generation African-Americans. There were Jewish students. There were there was a Polish student. It was just a fascinating mix. And as they live and work together in ways that previous generations of Americans did not, their sense about these sort of deep differences between us, I think, it's just not the same as it was in the past. And so I think they can begin through learning this history. I like to believe in the power of history, and then come to different ideas and different conclusions about what it means. And because race is actually something that is about, in its most fundamental sense, ascribing certain kinds of meanings to human bodies and human differences.
Now, you just mentioned that generational thing where lots of people have said that we've moved to a different place with regard to how some post-civil rights generation of folks view race as a social construct. And on the day that we are celebrating a man who dreamed that at one day, his four little children would be judged not by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. Is this whole premise of this of the exhibit be more readily acceptable now? Can people access, can receive it better, the messages that we're talking about human variation, not race as a social construct? I mean, for goodness sake, there's in one of the exhibits, there's 134 different ways to talk about race in Brazil. I mean, exactly. That's just, you know, mind-blowing.
Sure. Well, you know, but what I want to say is, I don't think that we've reached a point where we are in some kind of post-racial nation, where race as a construct no longer has force. It still has force. It has real force in people's lives. People still are discriminated against every day in this country on the basis of their skin color, on the basis of their accent, on the basis of various kinds of things like that. And so let's not be naive about that. And I don't think we've reached the post-racial nirvana. I just think that because of the increasing diversity in America, more and more people are willing to ask questions about race rather than simply assume they understand it. I think it's very good that the Museum of Science brought it here so we can have some public conversations about it. I think that public conversations, that people studying and understanding our vexed and complex history of race, then can bring people to another place. Now, I'm not the first academic who thought this. There are many in 1940s and 50s and post-World War II who thought, didn't we learn from what happened in World War II with the Nazis that we shouldn't, this concept should just be dispensed with? It's not that simple, because there are many, many ways in which it's so deeply embedded in our society and has an effect on people. Every time we have to check a box on a mortgage application or a financial aid application or any of these kinds of places, every time you've got to check a box, it sort of brings up a lot of these things. So until we reach a point where it's less embedded, more questioned, that we're able to talk about the good and bad and important parts of this notion in reasonable ways, which I think is still very hard for us, then it's still going to have an effect in our society. And until, as long as that is the truth of the matter, then it still has and it's still a viable and active concept.
This exhibit has been traveling since 2007, and it started in Minnesota, and the American Anthropological Association is, you know, put this together or really was the prime sponsor of it. It's funded by the Ford Foundation and the National Science Foundation. Now, the reason I mention that is because as it moves around, it's moving to science centers and science museums, which is, you know, quite deliberate in its approach. And I want you to speak to that. And I want to also ask you that, given that, is race still institutionalized in the medical community? We see that as well?
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm. So, as I said, I think it's important that the exhibit has been sponsored by the National Science Foundation as well as the American Anthropological Association, Ford Foundation, and other funders, because what I think the sort of deep belief behind this and the funders' goals are simply that if we can show people through the kind of interactive exhibits here where they can ask questions that speak to their assumptions and get different answers or surprising answers, then that will change how they think. I think that's really the goal. And so science has inordinate power in our country. I mean, we believe that, you know, these are not infinitely debatable questions. We believe that if someone says you know, skin color is based on presence of melanin in the body, and if you start walking from Africa and walk to northern parts of Europe, you'll see a gradual change in people's skin color, which has to do with exposure to sunlight and vitamin D and various other complicated things. That just by doing that, that's bringing in a number of scientific facts about why we are of different skin colors. That's a different kind of conversation to have about skin color, rather than one that we've often had in the more sort of cultural realm of whether some hair is good and some hair is bad and some skin color is good and some skin color is bad. You see what I mean?
Yes.
The shift to just the facts of how variation in humans works From the perspective of scientists who've done the kind of work on these kinds of issues, I think we hope that that will produce a different kind of conversation. And because people say, well, gee, I just didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a factoid that now makes me think differently about my other perception about, you know, why people are different colors.
Are we seeing race still institutionalized among medical community, among scientific community as we struggle through this?
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why, again, it's not... The exhibit can't tackle everything. It does have, just as the earlier PBS show did, tries to get us to see how the lived experience of race. And so biomedical professions, many scientific professions here in the United States are still have too few numbers of African Americans, of Latinos, and members of other ethnic groups who are actually practitioners. So there's still struggles we have. I wouldn't call the biomedical community the most diverse professional community we have, more diverse than was in the past, thank goodness. And hopefully, and there are many people concerned about increasing that diversity in the present. But I think it's really important to recognize that. And that because of that as well, there are lots of internal conversations about the meaning and how one might do work on human variation as well as on health disparities.
What does it mean to have this exhibit be in Boston? The history of Boston is rich with, strained race relations.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really important. I was so happy when the Museum of Science decided to bring it to Boston, because I do think that with our fraught history here, this is a good place where we can start talking about both that history, and we have a very vibrant, highly sophisticated, highly successful, and large scientific and biomedical community. And I think bringing all of that together through people coming to the various, both the exhibit itself and the various programming that will go on along the exhibit, I hope we can have a different, again, I just hope we have a different conversation about what race means. What it can mean, what it should mean, both in terms of how we live here in this community, but also just shaking up people's ideas about what they thought race was supposed to mean.
Thank you very much, Dean Evelyn Hammons. We've been talking about examining race through contemporary science with Evelyn Hammons, the Dean of Harvard College. Dean Hammons and the Du Bois Institute are hosting a Martin Luther King Jr. lecture by Dr. Melissa Harris Perry, titled Men Talking and Women Walking, MLK and Gendered Models of Black Political Leadership. It's at 7 tonight at Memorial Church, and it's free and open to the public. Thank you so much, Dean Hammons.
Thank you, Kelly. Thank you so much.
Up next, we continue the race conversation by hitting Route 28. With the Museum of Science leading the way, we'll get a tour of how communities up and down that stretch are thinking about and talking about race. Stay with us.